From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When most of us go looking for something on the web, we usually use a search engine. Google, Yahoo, Ask are among the most common, but each has its own idiosyncrasies, and each may give you slightly different results. We probably shouldn't complain. The fact is that the fact that they work as well as they do is a major miracle, considering the vast amount of information out there that can be retrieved with relative accuracy as a result of our inputting very brief, sometimes sketchy, search criteria. But how do you know what pieces of information your favorite search engine may be missing? Are you getting pure information, or is it being filtered in some way? Are search engines biased? One of our guests this hour thinks so. In fact, he says they all are. They have to be by their very nature. So we're going to take a closer look at how these time savers work, and we'll hear about a new search engine that is purposefully biased toward African Americans and find out why its inventor thought a search engine that caters to that segment of the population was necessary. Johnny Taylor is that inventor and the president and CEO of RushmoreDrive.com. The site is owned by Interactive Corp, which is also a parent company to Ticketmaster, LendingTree.com, Ask.com, Match.com, and the Home Shopping Network. How did that get in there? Johnny Taylor, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you for having me.
And Brad Gebert is the Vice President of Technology for Black Web Enterprises, Inc., which is Interactive Corp's newly launched online destination for the African-American community. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
So let me see if I got this right. You're the guy who thought up the idea, Johnny. And Brad, you're the guy who actually made it happen. You're the numbers, the digital guru, is that right?
Yes.
Is that how it's worked?
He's the rock. Rocket scientist, we like to say.
That's right. It is rocket science.
That's right.
And a lot of people out there, I think most people are internet savvy by this time, but just in case, define a search engine. What is a search engine?
Brad.
They're pointing to each other. We're going to go far today, let me tell you.
Well, a search engine is just a place for people to find what they're looking for. Quite simply.
Online. It's really interesting. A search engine, if you go back to, dating myself, the library, the Dewey mm-hmm. Decimal System, mm-hmm. and you go in, there's a card catalog there. Essentially, what a search engine is a very, very fast, microwave-like card catalog system. You are allowed to go into this library, if you will, and the tool that you use is the search engine. You tell it what you are thinking as best you can, and it tries to guess what you mean.
But this is a lot more complicated than the Dewey Decimal System and a card catalog, because if I recall correctly, and it's been a long time since I've used the card catalog, but you could look up subject matter, areas of subjects, you could look up authors, you could look up titles of books. But you could not go into a document or a book and pick out a three-word phrase and go, where is it? What book is that in?
That's right, and that is the beauty of the technology. And that's what search engines are all about. Mm-hmm. It's doing its best to guess, because even if you could do it in a library in the traditional sense, you can go in and do just that. You can say, I read this book and there were three words, and then the librarian would look at you with sort of glazed over eyes mm-hmm. and spend forever trying to figure it out. All the search engine does is really automate that process, and it does it much, much faster than we could do in traditional times.
And it uses things like spiders and crawlers, which go out on the World Wide Web. Unfortunate arachnid names. What exactly is going on? When I type in your name in a search engine, what goes on from there? What's happening behind the scenes?
When you type in any search term, it could be my name, it could be whatever you're looking for, we're going to go through. We've already crawled the web. We do it every day. And that's every page on the web, every link on every page on the web. We go through that.
Stop. Okay. Right there. How long does that take?
Days. I mean, the web.
So it never stops.
It never stops.
Your device never stops.
Correct.
Looking. Okay.
Well, the web's always changing. Mm-hmm. And so if we stop, we become stale and stagnant. Mm-hmm. So we have to do this every day. That information goes into what's called an index, our catalog. Think of it as a database, a place to put the information. And so then we have to go through, when you actually do your search and you hit the search button, we have to take that term.
I'm sorry. Stop again. Because you're saving all this information into a database, into a big server someplace out there in the universe. But you can't save every single page. So what exactly are you saving? Because I could ask you there could be a billion combinations of search criteria. If I search for something and you search for something and we're actually looking for the same thing, we might put in different terms, and it will come back with the right response. What are you saving?
We're saving page contents. We're saving meta information. What is a page about? What's its meaning?
Okay.
Let's take a look at all of the pages that link to it to help define relevancy. A good example would be like ESPN or actually AP News.
Okay.
If any news place you go, they always link back to AP News. AP is an authority on news.
Okay.
So when you do a search for news, we're going to go through the database and try to find the keywords. It could be Obama. It could be Mike Collins and NPR. And we'll try to find the information in the database where it's appropriate for the search term.
Okay. So you've stored this away.
Yeah.
I come to my little computer and I type in into your search engine, and your search engine looks through its own files and then goes out and retrieves.
Well, we've already searched
list.
The web, and uh-huh. So we have all that stuff captured. Now we're going to search our database and try to find all the information that's relevant to whatever query you put in. Mm-hmm.
If you think about it in the sense is we have the library, and when you conduct a search, we quickly have our little people, if you will, and as I try and sort of visualize it, run off and try to use the information that you've given us out of stored data. So there's a library full of a million books, and very quickly we go through and search those books. We've stored all of that information, and we're going to take the cue from the person who types in what we call a query or the question of the search term. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty and why this is so difficult is every word may have 10 or 20 at least different meanings to different people. And that's when we'll begin to talk a little bit more about the Rushmore Drive concept and identity search. The challenge for any search engine is any of us can search. We have, as Brad appropriately pointed out, we've crawled the World Wide Web, and we are constantly crawling it and updating it. As more content is created, this story today, for example, will be new, and tomorrow we have to crawl NPR's right. website to get that information. The challenge for us is to figure out, when you type in one word, Mike Collins, Brad Gebert, Johnny Taylor, what do I really mean? What am I looking for? And I'd just like to point out just one example. For example, Whitney. I type in Whitney. Does Johnny Taylor mean Whitney Houston? Does Mike Collins mean Whitney College? Does Brad Gebert mean Whitney Museum? It doesn't know. I mean, there's a billion different Whitneys.
I meant Eli Whitney.
Eli. Exactly. Very good point. And so there, and we can really get into that. That's where it's about relevancy then. Anyone can crawl the web. The question is, can you help people find information that's relevant to what they're looking for?
And I don't want to get too technical because people's heads will explode, but you're the guy that makes all this happen, or made it happen for RushmoreDrive.com, and you use things called algorithms. Is that correct?
Yes.
What is an algorithm?
It's just a math equation. You know, A plus B equals C, only it's a lot more complicated than that.
It's the process.
It's kind of hard to put into words, but it's our secret sauce on what makes Rushmore Drive unique.
Okay. All right. There are so many search engines, and I thought yesterday, I was trying to think back, what was the very first one I ever used? And I don't know for sure, but the one that pops into my mind is something called AltaVista, mm-hmm. which when I recall when it came out, it was to cat's meow.
I was a huge fan of that.
Soon to be replaced very quickly and everlastingly, it seems, by Google. Although there is Ask.com, which your parent company owns, and there's Yahoo. For some reason, most people, and I could be wrong about the numbers on this, so correct me if I am, most people seem to prefer Google. Is
they
that
do.
Correct?
Yes.
Why?
Well, they have great results. They're fans.
Why?
Why do they have great results? They crawl everything. They actually own part of the backbone of the internet. So they were able, they
but
know.
They didn't start out on the
internet. No, they didn't. Sergey is a brilliant guy. He has, you know, hundreds of PhDs working for him.
Yeah.
And it's all they do is try to perfect the way search works. And so they've taken their time. They've taken 10 years. When they came out 10 years ago, they weren't what they are today. So they have slowly built up, you know, a wonderful algorithm, a wonderful process to be the market leader.
And if I type the same exact search terms into Google, into AltaVista, which I believe still exists, into Rushmore Drive, into any of the others, will I come up with similar or dissimilar results?
I'm going to say dissimilar.
You'd say, yeah, I think it depends. I mean, obviously, at some level, there are terms that mean the same thing to everyone. For example, if one were to type in Beyonce, mm-hmm. I mean, it is, first of all, such a unique spelling and a unique name that right. if you type in at Google, Rushmore Drive, ask.com, essentially, you're going to get the same results. There will be some difference because it's the source. Where do they crawl more deeply to get into the concept of crawling? Google may identify a particular website, allhiphop.com or mtv.com, and dig that more deeply. Then Rushmore Drive might go to bet.com and dig that, crawl that site more deeply, because it's one of the sites that we focus on because it's more relevant for our mm-hmm. community of users. But at the end of the day, that particular term is pretty specific, so it won't be that dissimilar.
Well, let's talk about Ask, which I believe started life as Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. Yes.
That's owned by your parent company. Now, that's meant to be what, a generalized search engine to go out there and search everything in the known universe. Whereas yes. RushmoreDrive.com, as we're going to talk about in a second, really concentrates on things that would probably be more of interest to the African American community, correct?
No.
No.
Rushmore Drive is a general search engine, just like Ask.com, Google, et cetera. I mean, we are a general search engine. What we do, though, is in delivering our results, we try to blend in things that are more specifically relevant to the black population.
Whereas Ask would not.
Would not.
Right. And because they are really
mainstream.
They're vanilla.
Well, that's the point. Yes.
Well, I don't mean.
No,
I
not
mean,
in a derogatory yeah, way, right. but they do. And that mm-hmm. really speaks to the issue, Mike, of, and your users, that, you know, I was challenged on one radio station. Why do you need this? And you know, isn't the internet supposed to be welcoming to everyone? Mm-hmm. And the real issue for search engines, the mainstream and general search engines, is that anyone, they give you anyone the ability to search. The question is, can you find? And so how Rushmore Drive is differentiated from Ask.com or Google is we are trying to somehow take this ton of information and find what you are looking for on a more relevant basis.
I was going to ask you, and I will probably, I'll do it now. I was going to ask you why we need a search engine that targets a specific community. But before I do that, I mentioned in the very beginning that you believe, and I don't think I was inaccurately quoting you, that search engines are biased, all of them.
Yes.
By their very nature.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Because search engines actually serve as a proxy for the majority. So to the extent you're in the majority, then they are biased towards you. So if 1 million people go onto a search engine and type in a particular query or term, and the majority say this should go, you know, I asked for Mike Collins, and the majority type through to Mike Collins at NPR, and then there is a black or a Latino person by the name of Mike Collins. And every person in that black Latino community types on that, they are still such a small, relatively minority. They are a minority group, and therefore that search result, what they mean when they type in Mike Collins, is not likely to come to the front page.
So your example of Whitney is, if African American typed in Whitney, he or she is probably looking for information about Whitney Houston as opposed to
Whitney College. More likely, but more likely than not.
That's Johnny Taylor, president and CEO of RushmoreDrive.com. Along with Brad Gebert. We'll continue in just a moment. Our program is made possible in part today by today's Charlotte Woman. Space reservations now available for the 2008-2009 TCW Resource Guide, a business and community information source for Charlotte area women. Deadline is June 16th. Details at 704-521-6872. And by Tyler to Construction, anticipating and servicing the ever-changing needs of the commercial construction marketplace for 25 years. Tyler2Construction.com. Tomorrow on this program, we take a look at the ordinances that help protect our increasingly disappearing tree canopy. We've used the tree canopy here as a magnet. Come see us. See how beautiful we are. Live here. And then as people do that, the tree canopy begins to disappear. And protecting it, it turns out to be pretty complex because every municipality in the area has its own ordinances on doing so. We'll look at those tomorrow at 9.
Record-breaking gas prices, rising unemployment, and ongoing troubles in the housing market suggest continued financial woes. Why the declining value of the dollar is being blamed for economic problems at home and abroad. The Diane Rehm Show. Tuesday.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10, right after Charlotte Talks, here on Listener Funded, 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
We've all heard the saying, if you have a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Right.
Which really isn't true if you've been doing it for 10 years. You know, sometimes you wake up and it's like, oh, I can't handle another anaconda today.
WFAE's Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Join us Wednesday evening, June 18th from 5:30 to 8 at Spirit Square. It's free, but you need to RSVP at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about search engines today, and we're going to talk specifically in a few minutes about RushmoreDrive.com. It's the brainchild of Johnny Taylor, who is the president and CEO of that new search engine, which is also a subset of Black Web Enterprises, of which Brad Gebert is the vice president of technology. He's in the studio, and that is a subset of Interactive Corp., which is owned by Barry Diller, who used to be... Didn't he produce the Bee Gees?
Absolutely. That's funny. No. He's a television and film guy.
But he did produce the Bee Gees, didn't he?
No.
No, he didn't?
No.
All right. Well, he owns Ticketmaster. Well, your company owns Ticketmaster, LendingTree.com, Ask.com, Match.com, Home Shopping Network. Oh, if I had access to the Internet, I would type in Barry Diller and find out exactly what he's all about. We're going to talk about your thing, your website, but why do people choose one search engine, or should people choose one search engine over another if they want a certain kind of result? How would you know which to use?
It's relevancy. That's the big word. It sounds like a real technical word, but at the end of the day, when you're searching, you want to find. And since, as you pointed out earlier, and we all know, when you type in a search query at a search engine and it says one of 64 million documents, mm-hmm. Well, none of us is going to spend time going through, frankly, past page 3. So you will decide what search engine you want to use based upon how quickly and how relevant those search results
are. And if I don't get the results that I'm looking for, is it because I've done something wrong? I've put in the wrong search criteria? I've done it syntactically incorrectly? Or is it because the search engine isn't the right search engine for me? Or worse, the search engine is putting things at the top of the list that they're getting paid to put at the top of the list.
Wow, now that's loaded. Well, let's start with search is an imperfect science at best. It's good, but it's not great because we're trying to figure out what you, Mike Collins, mean when you go in and search in term. Just as we talked before the break, when you type in Whitney, I'm not really sure because it could be Eli Whitney or it could be Whitney Houston or Whitney M. Young. So that's part of the challenge. So I don't know that the search engine is wrong, and I don't know that you're wrong because you know what you mean. Obviously, the more words that one uses when one puts in the search term, the better, because it helps us narrow and get closer to what you mean. If you put Whitney and a last name or college or whatever, then we're clear. But specifically with respect to the two types of search results that you typically get when you search, there's sponsored links, which are the top two or three or four links at the top of the page, and they're usually highlighted. And then there are organic search results. And so we'd like to break those down. Organic search results on our search engine, for example, 10 of the results that you receive on the on your search results page are what we call organic, and they reflect what the majority of the people really mean. It's trying to get to what we think you mean. Those are unpaid. No
and
one
you
can
know that because through previous user searches, user
yes.
behavior.
User
right.
behavior. So as people have clicked over time, they've now taken that to its top. And so we have this phrase, the more you use it, the better it'll get. That applies to all search engines. The more that community, that user base uses it, and they click on that term, we now know what you mean when you type.
Does that go down? That's for the mass of people that use it. But as an individual use it, does it get to know the individual's habits as well, depending on the search engine, or is it simply the mass community?
Depending on the search engine, some search engines will keep track of what's called a cookie. It stores everything you do, and so it would know that my computer, my IP address, tend to visit technology sites and news sites and entertainment sites, and they would know which ones I go to. Some search engines, like ours, don't track that information. We know that the community clicks on various links within the search results, but not the individual.
So how much do you, as a search engine company, know about your users? Do you simply know that they go to BET or they go to the Ebony website or they go to Barack Obama's website? Or do you know where they live, who they are?
That's right.
What do you know?
Big brother.
No,
it depends upon what the individual wants us to know. We don't track. Search engines aren't particularly interested, at least Richmond Drive isn't, on an individual level unless you want it that way. So, for example, if you come to us, complete a registration, tell us everything about you, so that we develop a more personalized search experience for you, then we will.
And you offer that.
And we do.
Which I found surprising when I went and visited yesterday, because Google never asks me. I don't think Ask asks me. I don't think Yahoo's ever asked me who I am or what I want. You ask what they want.
And I think that's
who they are.
And that's because the type of search that we engage in is a new type of search, homegrown here in Charlotte, and it's called identity search. And it really is not intended to be a mainstream search. So if you think about the evolution of search, I don't want to bore you with it, but very quickly you go from general search, as you said, the AltaVistas, the Googles, the Yahoos of the world. And then search evolved because people said, gosh, there's millions of different responsive documents. Can you get more clear, more specific, more relevant to me? And so then there became this concept of vertical search. So instead of, if I'm a sports buff, then I don't need to go to Google to find what happened in the Lakers game. I'll go to ESPN. That's
right.
More vertical. It's really giving, it's narrowing the search, if you will. And then recently we've seen this new idea called social search, and that's really getting to smaller communities to know what people like Mike Collins or Brad Gebert really are interested in. And we have created this new, sort of totally new category of search that, frankly, it takes in consideration and reflects all of those three prior versions, and it's called identity search. And identity search really does get to what the specific identity group is interested in. It could be black, it could be women, it could be gays and lesbians, it could be any group group of people who identify themselves with common experiences, associations,
Are there privacy issues involved in any of that? I mean, you're obviously giving that information over voluntary, or is it simply that you are, by virtue of the fact you've chosen to use a particular search engine, then you are willing to allow them to know more about you, track you.
By coming to Rushmore Drive, we can make the safe assumption that you're either a black American or someone interested in black American topics.
That's right.
But I could screw you up because I went there yesterday.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And it's funny that you'd mention that, because in fact now we know that our base is about 30% mainstream or majority.
Uh-huh.
And so that is a different fact. We know that we have a significant
I mean, Brad is screwing you up.
No, Brad's helped us out. That's right. For the listening audience, Brad's our white guy. And I'm your black guy. But no. I think you're absolutely right. And that's really one of our points, is that we elevate black results, but this is not a black search engine. So it's not all things black. Our goal is not only to give you Whitney Houston, but this audience may be interested. Black people are interested in going to college, so Whitney College might be of most interest.
Okay.
So it's about the blend. That's the difference.
We're going to talk more specifically about Rushmore Drive, which is this new search engine that targets African Americans, and it's the brainchild of Johnny Taylor, who's our guest and the president and CEO of that organization, and Brad Gebert is the vice president of technology. He's the guy that made it happen after the idea was born. But we're going to take just a second out of our conversation here, and you can feel free to jump in here, but put your headphones on so you can hear it, for a short look at what, if any, legalities that search engines must follow. We're joined by Dr. James Grimmelman, assistant professor of law at the Institute for Information Law and Policy at New York Law School and a member of its Institute for Information Law and Policy. Jeez. In addition to his expertise in the law, Dr. Grimmelman also has a background in computers and worked for a while as a programmer for Microsoft and served as a resident fellow of the Information Society Project at Yale. He joins us by phone. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
We talked a little bit about this before you joined us. Each search engine works a little bit differently and uses different algorithms to search for what you asked for and return results. Those algorithms could, I suppose, radically alter what you get back. Are they proprietary formulas? Are they secret? Do search engines Is there some big book out there that they say, well, I'll use this one, I'll use that one, or are these algorithms developed by the people who are running the search engine?
So there are some basics of how to do good search that are well known because they came out of academics, and Larry and Sergey from Google published their original idea. But in general, most of what they do is it's secret sauce. It's closely guarded stuff because it makes Google Google, and it makes Rushmore Drive Rushmore Drive. And if anybody could copy it, then suddenly you'd have a clone of Rushmore Drive, and they'd lose some of their distinctive advantages. So the companies generally keep these things very close to the chest, and in law, that would be considered a trade secret. And so they can actually go to court if somebody, wakes in and steals the code.
Secret sauce must be an industry term, because it's been tossed about here for the last half hour. I'd never heard it till this morning, and it's a great term. It's the code. Are there laws governing, or any rules at all governing, the order in which search engines return results?
There are very few, if any. Brad and Johnny talked a bit about the difference between paid placements and organic search results, the paid placements being ads that show up in a different color at the top, and the organic search results being the search engine's guess at what the users want to see. And the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has warned search engines to keep the two separate, that they shouldn't be taking money from people who they're providing results on in order to rank them higher without telling people. It's okay to have ads on the search engine, okay to be paid for them, but you have to be upfront that that's what you're doing.
But if you choose not to pay Google or any other search engine to appear at the top of the list, can you appear at the top of the list by happenstance? Or if they just don't like you for some reason, can they put you at the bottom of the list?
Both things can absolutely happen. So you take Wikipedia, for example, which is they're not paying anybody for their search results, but they show up very highly in a lot of search engines because people have found they offer pretty good results if you're looking up anything from zebras to zebra mollusks. So they're not paying anybody, and they wind up being highly placed because a lot of users think they're relevant, that being the magic word.
And we've touched on this, but how does the search engine know that I think they're relevant?
So search engines have, as Johnny and Brad have been talking about, a lot of great ways to learn what people think is really important. Some of it comes from just the words that show up in the page. That, a Wikipedia article on zebras probably uses the word zebra a lot. Maybe this has something to do with zebras. But it might also be that other people out there on the web make pages that link to it. They say, I found out about zebras from the Wikipedia page, and they include a link to it. So the search engine going around crawling the web sees that and says, somebody thought this page had something important to say about zebras. So, and then they also can look and see when people get their page of results. Out of those 10 results, they might pick one or another because they think it's more helpful to them. And the search engine sees, if everybody keeps on clicking on result number 9, maybe that's really relevant to what they're looking for. We'll promote it, and they'll become result number 1.
So it's in their best interest to keep an accurate, to accurately assess usage, and even whether or not they're paid to return results, to move things up that people find most useful. It's in their best interest to do so, correct?
Correct.
Absolutely.
Are there privacy issues? We've talked a little bit about this with Rushmore Drive specifically, because you don't have to give them any information, but there's a place on their website for you to do that, which may help them refine their search so that they return better results for you. But are there privacy issues or any laws or regulations dealing with how search engines use the information that you either give them or that they just get through the use of their site by your computer to identify you as a user?
So there are various privacy laws. None of them have been written specifically to deal with search engines. These are all general-purpose privacy laws or general-purpose Internet privacy laws that put some constraints on what they can do and what happens there. So, it's not okay for somebody who's not with the search engine to be sitting there and scooping up all of your queries to the search engine. Then that's a kind of wiretapping, and that's no good.
Mm-hmm.
But the main theory that the law goes on between you and the search engine is that it's a voluntary transaction between two knowing parties. The search engine is offering you a service, and in exchange, you're telling them a little personal private information to help them help you better. It's a bit like going to a travel agent. The travel agent can't give you good recommendations unless you tell them a bit about what you're interested in. So the main theory the law goes on, and there are some exceptions, but the main theory is that this is a knowing transaction, and that if the search engine tells you, this is what we do with your personal information, this is how we use it, and this is how we don't, as long as it sticks to that policy, you knew what the policy was, and they take care of it on terms that you agreed to.
Now, obviously, they have to have your IP address. Otherwise, they couldn't return the results to your computer. They would go out and search, and they wouldn't know where to send it. But they, as I think Brad mentioned, they will place a cookie on your computer, which tells them what? Allows them to do what, aside from simply return the result?
So the cookie allows them to associate you and your searches and your computer with them, even if the IP address changes. Say if you have a laptop and you plug it in at home and then you go out to a coffee shop and connect on the wireless network there, the IP address will change, but the cookie on your computer says, hi, it's me, it's the same guy, and they know that it's you and they can keep track of your history and know that you were looking for results on Inventors and Eli Whitney rather than Whitney Houston and pop singers.
Of course, you can delete these cookies at will, I suppose, and then you start all over again, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
Are Internet search engines responsible in any way for the content that they return? In other words, a lot of times they will return absolutely copyrighted material. I mean, you can get pages out of books on the Internet. You can get video clips. You can get song clips off the Internet. Are they responsible in any way to the copyright owner for returning these, or is it simply because it's out there, and we can bring it back to you?
What they've got is a kind of partial immunity. And the way it works is they're not responsible for stuff that they didn't know wasn't okay. So even if you search for a book, and then search engine, you know, knowing that this is a relevant result, points you to a site where somebody has scanned the whole thing in, they're not liable for that to start off. But if the copyright owner finds it and says to the search engine, that's an infringement of my copyright, stop doing this.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the search engine becomes liable if they don't act to take it out of their result.
Is the same true of dangerous material being on the Internet? I don't want to be specific because I don't want to give anybody ideas, but material that if you got it and it fell into the wrong hands, it could be dangerous. Are they liable for that in any way?
They're not. And the asymmetry between copyright, where the copyright owner can say, that's a problem, you've got to deal with that, and say, dangerous stuff or things that invade someone's privacy or horribly false lies about someone,
mm-hmm.
All of those things, the search engine is basically scot-free. They can ignore requests to get rid of it. If they want.
James Grimmelman is an assistant professor of law at the Institute for Information Law and Policy at the New York Law School. I thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome. When we come back, we'll talk more with Johnny Taylor and Brad Gebert, who are both with RushmoreDrive.com, and we'll talk specifically about this new website that targets African Americans. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by Hendrick Lexus in Charlotte, featuring the innovative RX400H with Lexus Hybrid Drive. More information is available at Lexus.com. And by Womble Carlyle Sandridge & Rice, seeking innovative approaches that help businesses succeed. Womble Carlyle Innovators at Law on the web at WCSR.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Reem Show, record-breaking gas prices, rising unemployment, and ongoing troubles in the housing market suggest continued financial woes. Why some blame the declining value of the dollar for economic problems at home and abroad. Guests from the Wall Street Journal, the University of Maryland Law School, and the Peterson Institute of International Economics on the panel at 10. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, how our increasingly mobile, multitasking, and virtual world may be eroding our willingness and ability to grapple with complex issues, and what this trend could mean for the strength of our democracy. That should be interesting. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. 704-926 WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or join our blog, wfae.org/charlotteblogs. And we're back in 60 seconds.
I'm Gabriella Saubert, and I listen to Morning Edition. You know, I have a long commute, about an hour. It's on a major highway, just straight.
Listening on your daily commute? We've got stories so compelling.
Before I realize that this story's over, and I was a good 20 minutes past my exit.
Though we don't intend to make you miss your exit, metro stop, or anything else, get a little lost in Morning Edition from NPR News.
With regional news, weather, and traffic, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
In this historic presidential election year, WFAE's responsibility as a listener-supported news organization has never been more important. You depend on 90.7 WFAE for coverage of the issues that are important to our community, for in-depth reporting, and the context and analysis you can rely on. 90.7 WFAE, your source this election year.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. I'm having a wonderful conversation off leave. That's why we were late coming back. With Johnny Taylor, President and CEO of RushmoreDrive.com, and Brad Gebert, who's the Vice President of Technology for Black Web Enterprises. These are two, they're subsets of each other, and this is a Charlotte-based search engine. How did it come to be based in Charlotte? Because this company that owns all of this is an international conglomerate that owns everything in the known world, it seems. LendingTree, Ticketmaster, Ask.com, Match.com, the Home Shopping Network, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes. I had lived here in Charlotte. I had worked with LendingTree. And but at the time when this business, the whole idea was born, I was in New York as the head of human resources for IAC, working for Bear Diller. And, we said, where are we going to start?
Didn't he produce the Bee Gees?
But we were sitting there, and I can tell you the decision was very simple for me. I wanted to, one, come back to Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Two, we knew that if this particular business, Rushmore Drive, was going to be focused on the black community, 55% of black people in the U.S. live in the Southeast.
Okay.
So the idea was we were going to be in the South, and there were other cities. There were Atlantas, the Memphises. There were other options for us. But I loved Charlotte, have been here now 10 years, although I'm originally from the most southern state, Florida. But we decided that we're going to be here in part because we had a group of sister companies here, LendingTree and realestate.com were based here in Charlotte. And it was sort of home to one of the other IAC mm-hmm. companies. And so we're here. But most importantly, Charlotte was a diverse community with roughly a 30-40% black population.
Did you have to build your code from scratch, or could you borrow some code from Ask.com and build on that?
We actually took Teoma, which is core to Ask.com and some other search engines that are out there. And then we added, we've been joking about special sauce or secret sauce, we added our own flavor to it. And one of the ways we did that is something we like to call geobias. So to start off with, we knew where we were going to launch. But how do we know what black Americans are looking for? You know, how are we going to be any different than Ask or Google? Mm-hmm. So we started taking a look at the black population centers in the U.S., and they're primarily in the Southeast and also in the Northeast. And then we went through vast amounts of data of what are people in those areas searching on. And we found that a person in Georgia searching for Whitney means Whitney Houston. A person in Iowa with a very low black population searching on Whitney doesn't mean Whitney Houston. And so it's that type of analysis that led us to the search engine that we have today. And that's really what sets us apart.
So in other words, through our ISP addresses, no matter where we are in the country, you have overlaid those addresses onto a map, and you know fundamentally where we are and whether where we are is a center of black population. Do you do it by zip code, or do you do it by city or state? How do you do it?
Well, if you think of the IP address, it's like a phone number. You know, so we can target that to a given area, mm-hmm. you know, pretty close to a zip code.
Really?
And through that, we took a heat map of the U.S. based off of census data and compared the two. And lo and behold, they were pretty much dead on.
So even within Charlotte, if you access your website, say, from Myers Park versus Bayes Ford Road, you would maybe get a different result from your search engine because the engine would say, that's not, Myers Park is not a high density African American area, so we'll think about this before we just return an Afro-American centric.
No. To be clear, that there are two different issues. The geobiasing doesn't affect how we give you a different set of results. Your set of results, no matter where you are going to be Rushmore Drive results. What it did was informed how we would go about delivering results for the entire community. So it's, again, not specifically targeted at Johnny Taylor's ISP. It's the black community, mm-hmm. and it's based upon large areas, geographic regions where there are larger black populations. Because we've also found, again, that every black typing on Whitney doesn't just mean Whitney Houston. They may mean Whitney College or Whitney M. Young from the National Urban League former executive director. So it's about trying to determine what black people mean in terms of it, but it's not going to deliver a different set of results based upon someone living in one part of Charlotte versus another part of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And one of the things that you wanted to do was to correct, if I understand this correctly, some negligence on the part of traditional mass appeal search engines. And by negligence, I don't mean that it's deliberate, but for instance, they may return a website that might be relevant to your search. They may put it further down in the list if it's simply an African-American website because the majority of the population may not be interested in that particular piece of information, whereas you look at that website and say, that's something that our users probably would want to know about, and you move it up.
We elevate it, yes.
So why are they doing this on the mainstream websites? Why are they putting black websites in a lower position? Is it ignorance? Is it racism? Is it due to money or influence? Is it simply because the vast majority of the population wouldn't be interested?
That's the answer. The vast majority of the answer.
And there are that many instances out there of that happening that would necessitate an African American targeted search engine?
If you look at the population, it's 14% black. Mm-hmm. If you look at the population, our user base of Google, it's 14% black. So Google is doing, in their best interest, they're trying to answer to 84% or 86% of the population, which is not black, and trying to make results relevant to that population. And so we just took a different approach and said our user base is 14% of the population, but it should be close to 100% of our user base.
To that point, Mike, it's Brad coined this, and I love the phrase when he says, this is the one place where the black community is the majority. And frankly, it's no different in any, everything's about relevancy. If I want sports information, then I go where I can get highly relevant sports information. The other day we were typing in Bentley. I'm a car enthusiast. And I ended up with the Bentley Hotel, the Bentley Spa, the everything at Google. Well, I was interested in Bentley automobiles, so I'd do better going to Edmunds.com or a specific site. So it's all about giving the most relevant, quick results.
Well, that answered my next question. How well are you doing? Evidently, you're doing very well if you're looking for business.
But I like them.
This has been, you launched this website in
April 10th.
April. Do you have a feel for how you're doing yet?
Yeah, quite a feel, and it's a wonderful feeling. We're just so fortunate. This business has exceeded all of our expectations. In our first full operating month, we exceeded our targets by almost 400,000 more visitors than we thought we would have. So it's been phenomenal.
How do people find out about it? I mean, if I were to type in African American search engine into Google, would you pop up?
Very likely. I haven't tried that, but I tell you what, we're doing our own search. We're marketing. We're doing things like this, and I'd like to thank you and all of your audience for listening to us. We're talking on radio. We're actually advertising in print, on online radio, so we have a marketing campaign. We're talking to community groups. We've been on a mega church tour where we've been visiting churches all over America, 9 cities so far, with Regina Bell, who's a former, Grammy Award-winning performer, and she has a new gospel project. So we're taking her as a guest to many of the largest black churches around the country. So a number of offline, online, traditional media, television,
This is where the power of your parent company comes
absolutely.
In. Because this is not inexpensive to do.
Right. Well, we're using the power of IC, but we're also using the power of Google. We hit the search engine optimization, our site's well-tuned, and so Google is giving us traffic. which is a little bit of irony there.
And Yahoo and everyone else. Because, again, their right. job is, that's why I really want to make that point, that Google's not trying to be racist or sexist or anything else. They're simply, they're a proxy for the majority. Mm-hmm. And so they want to give the most relevant results that they can give. Well, it's very hard to give very, very relevant results to 14% of the population mm-hmm. when 86% of the population may want something else. Mm-hmm. So they're doing really well at what they do.
If it's only 14% of the population, if African Americans only comprise 14% of the population, and this is a big company that this is under, is there enough money to be made to make it worth the while to invest all this money in the development of this product, in the promotion of this product? Is there enough money out there?
Well, I tell you, yes, because roughly that 14% translates into roughly 50 million blacks. And when it's important to say we're not just targeting African Americans. Mm-hmm. That is one part of the black diaspora, but we have people of Hispanic descent who identify with being black, people from the Caribbean, people who are from Africa who live in the U.S. So it's broadly black. But yes, if you think about it, BET, who sold for billions of dollars to Viacom, is focused on the black community, the urban community. Right. So there's clearly a big business to be made. Ebony Jet, the publisher, Essence, et cetera. So yes, there is big business with this 13% of the population.
You don't just get an idea to do something and bring in a guy like Brad who knows what he's doing and put it on, I was going to say put it on the air, but put it on the internet on
yes.
April the 10th. You obviously had to test this for some period of time. How long did you work on this to get it to be where you thought this is going to work the way we want it to work? How long did that take?
He looked a lot younger 8 months ago. That's the only thing I can tell you.
Well, let me go ahead and say, you know, I was the first employee. I started back in June of last year, but I'm not the only person there. We've got a wonderful set of developers and staff in Charlotte. I've got three software architects in Charlotte. I've got engineers in Pisa, Italy,
really?
In New Jersey, Oakland, California, Vancouver, Canada. So we have engineers and PhDs all over the globe working with this, trying to make this.
Why does it take so many people? Why does it take so many different experts? I mean, by now, search engines have been out for, what, 15, 20 years now, probably longer when you consider that the internet, before it went public, had Gopher and Veronica and Archie and things like that. Why does it take so many people?
It's complicated. If it
well,
was,
sure it is.
If it was that easy, I mean, Google wouldn't be the dominant leader that it is today.
Uh-huh.
You know, people, they strive to emulate Google. They want to know how to make their page to show up number one on Google because you can't just go by the cliff notes on how to make your page number one on Google or any search engine. And so you need, it's a living, breathing process. You know, we wrote the algorithm, but we can't just sit down and say, we're done. We're going to go on vacation. We never sleep.
And everyone's trying to make it better, which is exactly why Rushmore Drive was born. I mean, if Google were the answer and it were done, it'd be solved and there'd be
right.
no everyone. We've evolved again from general search to far more relevant search. And that's exactly what this is about.
You mentioned geobiasing. Is it that's something that you do? It's a geographic overlay to see how to best serve the community that you're going after. Is that a relatively new concept in this industry?
It is. It's so new that we actually have a patent pending on that.
Wow.
Yeah, so, proprietary technology. It's so, not just, you know.
So Google can't, they can't steal it from you.
They can't do it the way we do. Yeah. Now, obviously, it's the secret sauce. And we like to say anyone can flip a burger. The question is, does yours taste better than mine? And so ours is distinctive. And I like to say Google is our partner. I mean, everyone's our partner. When we initially launched this business, the idea was that we were competing with the other black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
A search engine's job is to link you to content providers that you find most relevant. We are not competing with Essence or .com or Black Expressions. .com. Our job is to send them traffic, and it's really interesting, even when you look at our metrics, we don't have a lot of time on site. The faster you get to RushmoreDrive.com and find what you're looking for and say bye-bye, then that means we've done our job.
This started, as I understand it, as a result of focus groups with black internet users who told you what they wanted, and one thing that they didn't want was a black search engine. So what did they want?
Well, what,
and why are you in existence?
I'm so glad you said that, because there is a big difference between a search engine for the black community and a black search engine. And you may think of that as semantics. The deal with a black search engine is that's all things black. That means when you go in and you type for books.
And only black.
And only black. Mm-hmm. Only black. And what our audience told us and our users and our, in the search, the focus groups was, you know, we are a part of America. So don't assume that just because I'm black and I type in restaurant that I only want black owned or soul food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I may want to know the finest restaurant in Charlotte if I'm here and I type in restaurant. The issue though is I need you to elevate the black results so that I get a blend of them.
Right.
I don't want to have to type, you know, click through to page 50 to find a soul food restaurant, but I also don't want you to assume that that's all I want.
If this works well and you, purify it and perfect it along the way as it goes on, can you then say, okay, let's start an Asian American search engine. Let's start a Vietnamese American search engine. Let's start a Hispanic American search engine. Let's target the gay and lesbian community, et cetera. Can you do that? Will you do that?
Yes, we can.
Using your same engine.
Yes, we can. Obviously, the sauce changes a little bit because you have the benefit of geo-bias in certain of those identity group categories. Others you may not. If you go to gay and lesbian, they live everywhere. So perhaps you have certain core areas. San Francisco might have a larger population than other parts of the country, but it's more difficult. But there's no question that BWE, when we mention Black Web Enterprises, that's sort of the divisional entity, and Rushmore Drive is the first brand. We will have other brands without a doubt.
How do you make money? All these search engines out there, how do they make money? How are you making money?
Well, there are not a whole bunch of them, and those of us who do will do well, but it's primarily, think of television and think of radio. It's the advertisements. At the end of the day, we give away the search. Here you come, you find, and look what you do. But what we do is we sell to advertisers. We give them the opportunity to reach eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And so the more eyes that we bring to the website, to RushmoreDrive.com, the better the advertisers get visibility, and then they pay us for that.
And how much space do you need to house this operation that goes out and crawls the web 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then returns results? I mean,
we've got a data center out in Portland, Oregon.
We've got a little Dell laptop sitting on a desk.
It's a Commodore 64, actually, that does all the work.
Touché.
So you're out in where?
We have a data center out in Portland, Oregon, that houses, you know, it's hundreds of computers, and all they do is crawl and store.
Okay.
You know.
And why the name Rushmore Drive?
It is uniquely Charlotte. And that's what it is. It's the road that the street that we're located on here in Charlotte, actually in Ballantyne, in the Ballantyne area. We said all along, I mean, we were so frustrated. We spent tons of money on advertisers and branding and marketing people. And the point of it was, we are the starting point and destination for the black community. It's a place for us.
Johnny Taylor is president and CEO of RushmoreDrive.com. Brad Gebert is the vice president of technology for Black Web Enterprises. Thank you both for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our program is made possible in part today by PR Store, where marketing professionals provide strategic marketing solutions from a retail showroom in Lake Norman, Ballantyne, and Gastonia. Details at PR Store.com, PR Store, marketing simplified. And by Dr. James Altizer in the Vein Center of Charlotte, providing state-of-the-art outpatient treatment for varicose and spider veins. Trust the vein specialists, veincenterofcharlotte.com.
Next time on The World, rising demand for food means rising demand for fertilizer, especially for potassium-rich potash. The commodity price of this red rock is rising faster than the price of gold. That's good news for one Canadian province. Saskatchewan has nearly half the world's supply. The potash boom in Saskatchewan, coming up next time on The World. Tonight at 7 on 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Mike Collins. The Charlotte region has always been proud of its tree canopy, but that canopy is shrinking in the face of growth. It turns out that protecting the canopy is a complicated issue. Each municipality in Mecklenburg County must protect its own green space and initiate their own tree ordinances. We'll take a closer look at some of those ordinances and get some opinions on whether or not they can be effective against a rising tide of development when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. Mostly sunny, chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. High should be in the 90s, and maybe a chance of showers or thunderstorms tonight. Lower 70s, lower 90s tomorrow with another chance of rain. We'll see if it happens. 83 now at WFAE Charlotte, WFHE Hickory. From